I know how some of you fellows feel. I have to preach twice on Sunday morning. It feels like I just got through and here we are again. I feel like I've already done it. In a way, I'm sorry that we didn't have time for questions and some feedback from you after the last session, because I confess to feeling myself a little bit in the dark at the end of the session as to just where you all were in terms of what you wanted to say back to me after I had dumped all this load of my ideas about the D-men and supervision in it on you. And I hope that I can get through this material that I want to do in this hour a little more quickly, so that we do have some time for you to begin to question me and even disagree with me, or come at it from different angles before we get through. Basic task that we want to try to undertake in this hour is to think together about how one begins to, one or two, let's say speak in pairs, how student and supervisor, or small group of students and supervisor, along with the resources and supervision, if you will, provided by the seminary faculty, begin to shape the student's learning contract and how that eventuates in a doctoral project proposal. What we are attempting here then is to move one step beyond what we talked about toward the formulation of a kind of learning contract for the doctoral project, or rather I would see it as a series of learning contracts in the process of formulation of a doctoral project. Because one of the things that I've come to feel very strongly about in the D-men program is that students, and we get students in our D-men program, I don't know about yours, but we do in ours, particularly our in-career program, we have an in-sequence program as well, we get students who have their doctoral project already formulated before they get into the program. And sometimes they tend to resist reformulation of that project. And helping students to get into a process of formulation of a project, which means a series of ever widening or deepening experiences of intentional learning, is part of the process of getting the student into a doctoral ministry program, seems to me. Another way to ask that is, how does the doctoral project begin to take shape? And what is the relationship of supervision to that process? What signals the possibility of a good project, and not simply a good project in that it is an important task that needs to be done, but a good project that can deepen and enrich the becoming process of that particular pastor, and set in motion a process that can go on long after the Doctor of Ministry degree itself is completed? What is the project supposed to accomplish? How does the field supervisor or the faculty member assist the student in the formulation of that project proposal? And I would see that as a process of a series of learning contracts or revised project proposals. Now, to do that, I want to return to the triangle here and set alongside it another time, though, that really is a, it's simply another way of coming at the same triangle. And what I would really like to do, if I'm not an artist, but what I'd really like to do is set this triangle somewhere in here as the this begins to move toward focus. There's another kind of process that takes place, or another kind of dialectic going on, tension going on. And we would draw that, talk about here about normative disciplines. Which is another way of saying traditions. The traditions provide something of the norms for ministry. The norms of what ought to go on in ministry, what ought to be going on in the world, the critical quality in relation to the situation of ministry. The normative disciplines of theology, biblical studies, history, etc., provide us some images of what ought to be the norms. And then there's a set of situational disciplines. When I think of situational disciplines, I think of some of the contemporary disciplines that we willingly and open-handedly borrow from other areas of life, contemporary life, particularly the social sciences. All of those disciplines that begin not with a set of norms, but with a way of describing what's going on. In their extreme, some of these disciplines, like sociology, for example, tend to act as if there were no norms. Like my friend Earl Brewer, who's in sociology of religion on our faculty, says there are two schools of sociology. There's one school that says all we are going to do is observe carefully what happens while the world goes to hell. And there is another school that says we're going to observe what happens and try to do something about it. Same thing could be said of personality theories, for instance. But here you begin with kind of empirical data, observations that can be made, sometimes quantified, but ways of illuminating what is going on in the situation. And over here we put the functional disciplines. You see the correspondence here between situational disciplines and situational ministry, functional disciplines and the self of the minister. These are the disciplines like pastoral care, homiletics, the functions the minister performs, and all the discipline that is involved in that. So that as we begin to integrate these three points of this triangle and move toward a focused ministry act, we begin to draw upon disciplines, discipline perspectives that make this possible. So that you can draw that triangle somewhere in here. The project then is, at least as I see it, an in-depth sampling of how a particular pastor, a particular student, is to get these two triangles integrated into his understanding of ministry and his ability to carry out ministry within some specific community of faith and life. To be able to integrate this, deepen his integration of it, the greater sophistication, he needs to pay attention to all three of these kinds of disciplines. One of the ways of thinking about ministry as a generalist profession as over against a specialized profession is it's generalist in this sense. It has to draw from all three of these. One cannot simply stay at home in New Testament or church history and be a professional minister. One also has to draw on these other two. Likewise, the functional disciplines in any theological seminary are not a mini seminary of their own. You know that give lip service to this and this, but they draw from and need to be related to those other kinds of disciplines. For the student in a doctor of ministry program, that is not simply a theoretical exercise in two senses. It needs, in the first place, it needs to be geared, the process of integrating these disciplines needs to be geared toward assisting the student to grow with one or more issues that are crucial to him and his style of ministry. Now, one of the things I think I've discovered as students begin to draw from all three corners of this triangle and this one is that each of them, usually in a very vague and undifferentiated kind of way in the beginning, begin to get a hold of a kind of project in ministry. By that I mean a way of projecting myself into the ministry as a profession. Or, to use the language that pastors more often use, they will say, well, preaching is really my long suit. Or, they will say, I tend to think more in ethical terms about these things. Or they will say, I've learned that I'm a pretty good administrator. Now, I have an idea of what they're trying to get a hold of when they talk in that kind of language. They're trying to get a hold of a way in which I take hold of ministry, a way in which I project myself into ministry. Now, I know that for myself, that grows out of a personal history, a social milieu that I grew up in, a family I grew up in, a way in which I was educated, there's a few people that influenced me. I tend to take hold of the problem of ministry at the point of what's happening to persons in relation to whatever is going on. I tend to take hold of ministry in terms of seeing John Jones, who's trying to live his life with some kind of integrity, in a social situation that impinges on him, and I see him as a kind of opening into what's going on in the world at that time, and opening in to understanding the issues of theology and ministry. That's the way I project myself in the ministry. There are other people that project themselves into ministry in another way. If you have a seminar of even of seminary juniors, first year seminarians in the BD or MDiv program, and listen to the way they talk about their education and about the problem of ministry, you'll see that already from that early time of formation of their ministry, they're beginning to take hold of it in a certain way. Sometimes as a kind of protesting activist. Sometimes as a person who primarily wants to be of help to people, care for people. Sometimes as a way of a person who has experienced himself as having something to say when he gets up on his two hind legs. A beginning projection of himself. My hunch is that that's the beginning of his project in ministry. Now, what we want to try to talk about is how do you get from that point, which in DMin students, at least in career DMin students, tends already to have taken a certain shape. You can read their application materials and they'll give you a hint about that. How do we get from that to the formulation of a doctoral project as a kind of learning contract? Now that, if that is the case, then we can say several things about the project proposal. We can say, first of all, that along the way, let me erase one of these and put another little schema on the board. I really hadn't intended to put on it for a little later, but I think it'd be better if we got the forest all the way along. A kind of open-ended triangle. And if you take this this kind of beginning point of the formulation of a project in ministry as that that self-awareness of the notion of my handle on ministry. My long suit ministry. Somewhere early on in the program, there needs to develop a kind of contract which takes seriously that intentionality of the student for his ministry. Now, how does that contract begin to get written? Well, maybe begins to get written when he brings in to a supervisory conference with his field supervisor a verbatim report. Maybe a verbatim report of an interview that he has had with a parishioner. Maybe a verbatim report of a critical incident in his ministry. What students early on identify as something worth bringing for supervision will tell you a lot about what his kind of amorphous, unformed project in ministry is. It's interesting the way in which people who tend to think like I think, you know, think of ministry in terms of persons and interpersonal relationship, will tend to bring in a verbatim of a pastoral care conversation. Now, my suggestion is that, and I'm talking here not simply the field supervisor, but faculty people as well, my suggestion is that the way in which we respond to that bringing in of that verbatim, in terms of the kinds of questions that we raise, and that really harks back to the first hour we had to get, the kind of what questions we raise, ought to begin to tease out for him some learning goals that are maybe still very vaguely taking shape. That may take the form of, this contract for learning outline that Bob has given you all, it may take the form of the student having a vague idea that he doesn't listen well enough when he sits down to talk to people, and he wants to learn how to be a more active, responsive listener. It may be that instead of a verbatim report, he brings in, at this point, a report of an incident in which he attended a meeting and he encountered some kind of prejudice. Or he encountered the redneck attitudes toward convicts, like my student I described earlier. And one begins to wonder if his handle on ministry may be a kind of, that's beginning to take shape, is a kind of handle that he wants to shape his ministry around the notion of being the minister as change agent. Bring about change in the social situation in this community. Well, again, out of that ought to sift a few beginning learning goals. So that from the beginning, we try to help the student articulate with some clarity what it is his project, what's he's after. You may ask him to write a few short pages about that, 4 or 5 pages. What is it you intend? One of the devices that I used 1 year with our in-course group, which is, as I said, at a little different point than the in-career people. They're in process of first formation of their ministry. I asked them to write a biography in prospect. Not in retrospect, but prospect. Which would have to do with what do you intend to be doing in 5 years, 10 years? What issues of ministry would you see yourself working with? What are your intentions for your ministry? Which is a way of trying to help him get a hold of what is this kind of vague thing that's out here that he's trying to. Now, I have an idea that even though that's talking about the beginning student, that there are a great many parish pastors who've been out in the field for a long time who have not yet gotten a hold of their project in ministry. But instead are kind of rocking along, coping with whatever demands of the situation they're in are. They're simply dealing with one set of demands made on them after another, and they kind of get pushed around by every chance wind of doctrine and otherwise. How do we get ministry to become more intentional? And that has to do with self-awareness And with getting hold of some of these disciplinary aspects of ministry that with which I see most at home, maybe that's biblical studies, maybe it's theology, maybe it's history, ethics, pastoral care, Christian education, somewhere in one of those areas, I begin to find myself most at home. In order to help the student do that, we have to help him bring into focus some of the student's self-understanding as it is related to the projection of himself into ministry. And that should have about it both the sense of achieved self-understanding, I know who I am and what my strengths and weaknesses are, but also something of the problematic. What is it about ministry that I want to be able to do that I don't yet feel I can do very well? I haven't got it together, as the young folks say. Something of the problematic of my project. And that ought to sift out some learning goals. Then you get a little farther down the road. As these learning goals begin to take shape, that contract begins to change. And I've begun to feel that rather than asking students to write a doctoral project proposal way out here somewhere, or a finished doctoral paper way out here somewhere, that paper ought to be built in a kind of expanding, deepening way, with a series of efforts at articulating what it is I'm trying to project here, my project, how I'm going to go about doing it, what are the problematics in that. As I experience them today, but I have an idea that begins back here somewhere with the first thing he brings into you for supervision. And then begins to move on. But, well, then you begin to have a series of contracts, maybe written, maybe unwritten, learning contracts. But as it moves along, what these contracts here, as they get farther along, they need to move toward deepening sophistication in relation to these dimensions of ministry, and need to become specific in relation to the normative, functional, and situational discipline. In our program, we have what we call a comprehensive examination somewhere out in here, somewhere, before the student undertakes, quotes, the project. And the purpose of that comprehensive examination is not to test how much he knows. We don't ask him a lot of content questions, but test his readiness now to undertake the project as a sampling of his projection of himself in the ministry. So I met with a student just the other day who is now about at the comprehensive exam stage of his program. And I said, Ralph, the next thing you need to do is sit down and write me about a five, I'm his advisor. Sit down and write me about a 5 or 6 page short paper in which you would suggest the areas that you think you need to be examined on before you undertake this project you are about to propose. Which is a way of asking him, what do you need to know What have you learned as you've moved this far along the process that tells you what you need to know in order to carry out this project? Now, I'll be more specific with that particular student in a little bit. But first, let me say that as we move toward project proposal and these series of learning contracts that have a kind of broadening, deepening quality, we need to learn how to help the student learn how to relate his growing self-understanding to his deepening ability to make use of the various traditions that inform ministry, theological and social scientific. But with particular reference to his ability to utilize the normative disciplines in giving his ministry intentionality and direction. As I said earlier, the toughest thing in the DMIN is theological reflection. In other words, we have to help the student seek out a problematic in relating the Christian tradition in its normative function to some problem in the world with which his ministry must deal. And that rules out the Mickey Mouse project. But we also, as we move along, another dimension of this begins to take shape. And that is the formulation, gradual formulation, in his mind and in yours, of a proposed response to a problematic. In quotes, a solution to the problem. Not in the sense that the problem's going to go away, but a response. A response to the problematic that he's gotten hold of that anticipates carrying out ministry that seeks to put all of this into practice. And then finally, as he goes along, widening and deepening this learning contract, some ways ought to begin to occur to him and to you of evaluating the effectiveness or the impact of his ministry on the problematic. Now I want to give you thumbnail sketches of three doctoral projects, one of them completed and a student has got the degree, and two others that are still in process in our program, with which I'm intimately acquainted. Not as perfect examples, but as ways of making a bit more concrete what I've talked about in a kind of vague and general way. I mentioned a Mill Village earlier. I think of the student, this is the student who has completed the degree and now has his doctorate. He's now officially a doctor of ministry. My first contact with this student was when he came into our program as an MDiv student, and he came down to see me about his supervised ministry group, which happened to be one that I was going to be related to myself. And the question that he came with was, I see that my supervised ministry group has been scheduled on Wednesdays from 4 to 6. I have a prayer meeting at my church at 6:30. I want transferred to another group. And I said, how long have they been having prayer meeting at 6:30 on Wednesdays out there? He said, I don't know. And I said, well, suppose there'd be any, and I admit I was being brash at this point. So any possibility that it might be worth considering with them to change the time of that prayer meeting? And he went into a long dissertation with me about how ministry is a matter of public relations. And to ask his people to change the time of prayer meeting would be bad public relations. Because his people were sot in their ways, and I was asking him to get them to change them. And I came back at him with, you mean you don't expect anybody to change while you're out there? Well, you can guess, he got angry, got very angry at me. But, you know, he managed to get him to postpone the beginning of that prayer meeting to 7 o'clock. And he could just barely make it from the supervised ministry group to his prayer meeting on time by going without any supper until later. Right there is when I had him hooked. Because the idea began to dawn on him that maybe one of the purposes of ministry was for people to change. It happened that he was assigned to a mill village, not, you know, within easy commuting distance of Atlanta. Mill Village Church. Church that had been built by the mill, kept up by the mill. All the people lived in houses owned by the mill up until about 3 or 4 years before he went there, when the mill suddenly went out of business. Here he was, this was a guy about early 30s, who had been in a public relations job before he went into ministry. Prior to that, he'd taught history for a while. So he had an interest in historical things, how, you know, processes of how things change in history. The combination of my pushing him to change the time of prayer meeting, his interest in history, his happening to be assigned to a mill village, began to shape a problematic in his mind. That by the time he got in to the D-Men program, he was in our in-course, in-sequence program. The time he got into that had been fleshed out with some interest in pastoral care. I would guess he'd probably picked some of that up out of his relating to me, too. He took a clinical quarter somewhere along the way. He also found that he liked theology and did well in his coursework in theology, particularly with one member of the faculty in theology. Well, all that was kind of spinning around in his mind when he first got into the D-Men. And he first proposed that he do a project on pastoral care of people who have been deserted by the mill. That was his first, somewhere along in here, that was his first proposed project. Well, we fussed around and worked with that. And began to raise some theological questions with him. Ted Runyon, who was the theologian involved, happened after a conversation with this student about his D-Men program, have him say, well, you know, there's some interesting theological questions one could raise about what is going on in that mill village. What would be the implicit theology of this situation? And that got him working on that. Well, to make a long story short, what his project eventually was out here was a project in which he selected one family in his church as paradigmatic of what is going on in a mill village that has been deserted by the mill, and developed a theology descriptive of that human situation, and began to propose a theological and pastoral response. He's still working with his pastoral parish, just one family, but one family not as a simply a pastoral care problem, but as paradigm for what's going on in this larger situation. And then he began to draw from some personality theories, some of the studies of mill villages, and from Martin Buber's theology. Seemed kind of refiltered through his own process. And his final doctor project had that kind of shape to it. What is the response of a pastor in this situation to help these people change because their situation has changed? How does one describe that and reflect on it theologically? Or I think of another student, the one that I referred to a moment ago, who early on in his entrance into the men program, let me back up and say, this is a fellow who used to be the superintendent or director or administrator of a nursing home. He got into ministry sometime in his 30s, out of nursing home administration. One thing that got him into ministry was a conversion experience. He was a real evangelical. We do have some at Emory, in spite of what you may have heard of. A real Wesleyan evangelical. He had strong convictions about that. He did his clinical quarter at Wesley Woods Retirement Center, where he got back into his work with aging people and brought back some of the things that he had brought with him out of his nursing home administration, which he thought he had left behind when he went to seminary. He is at this point about here. If this is the doctor proposal, he's about here. He's the one who's at this point trying to write his own examination, or the areas that he wants to be examined in for his doctor proposal. You know what his doctor proposal is? His kind of tentative direction. It has to do with combining his concern for Methodist evangelicals who have been influenced by such things as biblical criticism, so are in some kind of transition from something old toward something new, and his interest in aging people, most of whom are evangelicals, in his mind. Well, here's a man's whole vocational history, a theological stance, a kind of tentative direction for his future ministry, beginning to come together around a doctoral project proposal. Okay, that's enough by way of examples. Just a word about the role of the field supervisor in assisting the student in this process of forming a series of learning contracts. I think probably one of the things that the field supervisor can contribute to that process, and it's a cooperative endeavor that the faculty, the student, and the field supervisor carry on together, all of whom have input into that process. One of the things that the field supervisor can contribute to that is that he ought to be the one who knows the student well, who knows something about the student's style, the learning problems that he has brought out of his context of ministry, the questions that he asks about those, the fellow who knows the situation, the student in his concrete situation of ministry. You ought to be the closest to that of anybody, other than student. He ought to be one who knows the student's ministry situation in some of its concreteness. I don't know how I could supervise a student, his contextual learning, if I'd never visited his place of ministry, gotten my own, something of my own feel of what's going on there, what the people are like, what that community's like, my own kind of sense of the situation. One ought to have something, some awareness of the concreteness of that situation. As it is perceived by a practicing minister. A theological professor, you know, professor of theology or pastoral care or what have you, who goes to visit that situation is probably going to come back with somewhat different perceptions than the field supervisor comes back with, because he takes a different perspective to it, disciplinary perspective. But it's important to get fed into that process how a practicing professional pastor would perceive that situation, in order that the student's perceptions can be rubbed against those. Then he ought to be one who knows something of the resources available to be called on in carrying out the project. By resources, I mean people. Other situations the student might visit. But particularly people who are close to the situation that might be resource persons. Then, as I indicated in the first hour, I think the field supervisor ought to contribute support and pastoring to the student as he goes through this process, which is a very frustrating process for the student, of groping his way along in the dark, trying to formulate something that doesn't quite, you know, every time he thinks he's got it all together, then somebody raises a new question about it and he's got to start over again. He sends in that first chapter thinking it's all done, and somebody red marks it, and that's frustrating. Necessary, but frustrating. So, field supervisor ought to be the pastor who is consultant and, in a sense, spiritual guide to the student as he goes through this process. Now, I have an idea that where this first learning contract may go out of a verbatim or incident report, somewhere along in here you may have a kind of case study that gets developed, like the one I described in the halfway house. And then a little farther along from that, you may get a kind of tentative project proposal outline. And then somewhere in here, that what do I need to know? In order to do this, and then finally you get a doctoral project proposal. But you notice I've got this open-ended. That doctoral project proposal ought not to be simply a closure. It ought to be something that gives direction to the student's future ministry. So that it is simply a sampling of the way in which he intends to carry out his ministry in the future. Okay, I could say some other things about that, but I think I'll stop there in order that we have a little time to get a few questions. Tell me where this doesn't make sense to you. Yeah.
This is not a limiting factor to the extent that wouldn't it be a worthwhile feature of whatever that project is to have that project with some generalizable character to it to aid the entirety of the ministry? For instance, your illustration about the mill situation, it appears to me like that would be a value to other ministers who are in a mill town that has failed and has a family similar to that one, which is highly unlikely.
Yeah, I quite agree with you that as this thing gets wider, one of the reasons I've got it wider and deeper is it ought to have more general application. There ought to be that the student back here, he's very much concerned with his, what am I going to do to get through this program kind of thing. But as that moves along, it ought to have the quality that I think all doctoral work ought to have, namely, how is what I am learning here applicable to the larger situation of ministry, and how can I make that available to other people? So it ought to have that quality of research and inquiry that you're speaking of. The other thing that I think is important in this, and I thought that's where you were headed when you first started, is that one of the problems with this way of thinking about it is that it can look as if we are only concerned with ministry of this particular student rather than the kind of missional aspects of ministry. How do you get a church, a local congregation, or a denomination, if you will, engaged in ministry in the world? So that it needs to have those leadership facilitating functions central to it, as well as what the pastor himself is. I tend to take, because it's my style, as I said, I tend to look at it in terms of how do you get the person, the student, into this process. But I think you can look at it from that other corporate perspective as well.
I agree.
Yes.
I kept wondering about the time factor in this process as you were describing what's going on here.
Yeah.
Did you say a word about that?
Well, I think one of the, put your finger on one of the problems for me, in particularly in the in-career programs, the contact programs, that you get one fellow who is planning to do some work one quarter out of each year for a period of 4 years. You get somebody else who gets a sabbatical year and wants to do it all at once. You've got people who are a great distance from the seminary or maybe at some distance from the supervisor. I think that's one place where you just have to work at it on a kind of case by case or maybe even see the pants muddling what. But I do feel that even with the most sophisticated pastor who's you know, who has been successful in ministry, and who comes into the D-Men after 20 years in ministry more as a kind of refresher, a way of getting a new focus on ministry. Even with that person, it seems to me you have a process something like this, if you can tease out the issues as I've talked about them today. And the time between this and this and this and this will vary greatly from one student to another. We've got students, a few students in our in-course program who are over in here by the end of their, what would be their third year of theological education, and are about ready to spend their fourth year carrying out that project. We've got more of them in that program than are back here somewhere at the end of that third year. Now, in career people are the same. You get some who are well along to getting some kind of broad outline of a project when they apply, who will give you some idea when they apply for the program of a project outline they have in mind. You get others who will apply for the D-Men program and they say something very vaguely like, as I read an application just the other day that said, almost, this isn't verbatim, but it's the gist, almost said, you get so busy in ministry, you don't have time to read books anymore. And all my study has had to do with my preaching. And I just want to get myself in a situation where I have to discipline my study again. Period. Well, that guy hasn't got the faintest idea about what his project is. Or at least he's not even articulated. And the first task is to begin to help him get some focus on that. Which may in the beginning have only a vague quality like, I'm interested in the New Testament. Or I want to do more to prepare myself to be a better pastor to my people. So you ask him to bring a sample of that. What he's talking about. I don't know whether that answers your question or not, but I think the time process will vary. Just
I thought I heard you say two things. I thought I heard you say that you wanted to start with the student at this beginning point as far as supervision was concerned, and you wanted to be with him while he was going through the process.
And if he's already here, that's where he is, and you got to pick him up there. You begin to raise questions with him about this, and hopefully, again, deepen some of his awareness.
I thought I was hearing you say that this is going to take a lot more time in terms of the calendar than the course is structured for.
It may. My own bias about academic studies generally is that we tend to act as if all people learn at the same rate of speed. And it ain't so. If I could do away with the quarter system and the course hours and begin to structure education around where students are and what their present needs are. It can take them somewhere. Now, all my academic friends stand over against me in that, but I don't mind being a maverick at that point. I think it's a word that needs to be said.
Dr. Gerken, you said an formulating the proposal, there had to be an anticipated response, and you implied that there could be some means of evaluation. At what point does this evaluation arise in this process?
Well, let me say two or three things about that. First, let me say that one of the mistakes that we made early on in our program was to take more seriously than we we should have taken, some of the tools that the empirical disciplines offer us about evaluation. And we tended to push students into, formulating proper questionnaires, and students got into chi-squares and all kinds of things like this. And then suddenly it dawned on us, maybe some of that was not as applicable to the work of the parish pastor as it was to sociological research. So that we're a lot more almost ad hoc-ish about the way we construct evaluation devices. But we do think that evaluating the impact of one's ministry is an important part of our project. And that problem has to be addressed somewhat. My own thought is that the project proposal ought to have a kind of tentative proposal about evaluation, and that the final project paper ought to have that finished.
That's what I was wondering, whether or not evaluating procedures you should be finalizing with project proposal, or simply...
You will learn some things as you do the project that will inform how you evaluate. So that needs to be kept open-ended. And I'm greatly concerned that the projects all have something to do with the student's own ministry. That it's not a project in which you get some people to do something over here while you stand off and watch, and then you evaluate what they did. Be that another group of pastors or even some laity. It has to be something which you make some bets, you can put yourself on the line. Say, this is a decision I'm going to go out and do, and then evaluate.
The question I want to ask you is in reference to the evaluation. If this project in ministry is to do something in the minister who does it, and among the people to whom he is doing it, what criteria of evaluation have you arrived at? What are the criteria that are native to any of these projects in ministry, whether it's in the Bill Village or somewhere else?
That's a difficult problem. The main thing I would say about that, out of what experience we've had with it, and we're crumbling still with it, is that the criteria for evaluation need to be consistent with the formulations of the problem that have been made theologically and in terms of the situational disciplines. That there has to be a kind of wholeness about that. That to formulate a project on the basis of one kind of theological stance toward ministry and then walk over here and pick up some tools from somewhere else to come back to evaluate doesn't make very much sense. You have undergirded that project with some deepened understanding of the disciplines that need to go into the formulation of it, and you draw the criteria for evaluating from those same disciplines. Now that puts some of us who serve on the seminary faculties to the test. Because one of the things that particularly, is that people in the traditional disciplines of history and theology and Bible do. But I'll share my bias. I think they're more inclined to do it than some of the rest of us. Is to kind of pull our skirts about us and say, well, I'm a biblical scholar. You practical people are going to have to evaluate this. But I think that the evaluation of a project has to know, the criteria have to emerge out of the disciplinary understandings that inform it. And that includes the Bible. And it includes the understanding of historical processes and how they take place. The interplay of theological ideas and social situation. Now, I'm answering your question in generalities, and I know I am, because it's hard to get specific about that unless you've got a concrete case in front of you. And then you begin to ask that kind of question of the representatives of the disciplines. Because I really think that